Exxon Electric Power recognizes local businesses, organizations, and individuals that partner with them to preserve the environment and promote sustainability. These are forward-thinking partners who are creative and effective in their approaches to promoting greater sustainability in the Tucson community. We're spotlighting those community partners in this special podcast series, and today we warmly welcome Danelle Hogan, Director of the Stamazing Project, which if you don't get excited about that name, what's wrong with you? I'm very excited to be celebrating Tucson Electric Power's Partners in Sustainability 2022 with episode one of our Community Partner Spotlight series. So Danelle, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
It's exciting. And just a little bit of that we got to talk off air, your enthusiasm is contagious, as is the work you're doing. And I'm really, really glad you're here in these very challenging times on many levels. So let's start with your bio, which I think is hilarious and at the same time, quite impressive. So here goes. I'm just going to read it because it's really funny and you can't improve on it. So while regularly claiming to know more about pre-K through 12 grade energy education than anyone else in the world, and that does sound a little bit like me, but I'm not in that area. I cracked up. I went, I love this person. Danelle Hogan says we should take that claim with a grain of salt, as there are not a lot of people competing for the title, but I'm glad to know that you are. That being said, she has in fact been a professional STEM, and in case you don't know what STEM stands for, it's science, technology, engineering, and mathematics educator for about 20 years. She started her career as a middle and high school physics teacher, which she has my utmost respect. I bow down to you. And then served 2 years as an Albert Einstein Distinguished Educator Fellow with the U.S. Department of Energy, working specifically on energy literacy. And that's why I decided to read the bio. We've got like a big brain person here. For more than 8 years now, she has been working as the director of the Stamazing Project for the Pima County School Superintendent's Office. In this role, Danelle is focused on providing professional learning opportunities to teachers, which allow them to grow as teacher leaders and better cultivate STEM minds, which we so need. So Danelle, I'm thrilled you're here. My first job was at Pima County Adult Education at 131 West Congress. So there was a lot of going back for me on this. I thought, I'm going to really love this person. Not to say that I don't love all my guests. Dave can attest to that. He goes, genius. You say that all the time. But it's true. That means I love my job too. So I want to do a little bit more about the background, because I think that leads to the story of why you're able to do what you do and why you created such an amazing program. So an unfulfilled dream of mine has been to live and work in Washington, D.C. for a stint. And you actually did that.
Yes.
So I want you to tell, it's like so exciting. And even though I'm 71, I still dream that dream, because dreams come true. Why not, right?
Absolutely.
I could get a call from the Biden administration saying they need a passionate planet preserver. So how did that come about and how was it? I want to know what that was like, the energy literacy framework.
Yeah. So I was teaching physics in Idaho at the time, and I was encouraged to apply for the Albert Einstein Distinguished Educator Fellowship. And that fellowship is amazing. It takes K-12 science and math teachers out of the classroom for a year or two and moves them to Washington, D.C. to bring a much needed experienced educator voice to the policy arena at the national level. And those Einstein Fellows serve in federal agencies and also in congressional offices on Capitol Hill. And again, really bring this informed experience to many, many different projects. And no two Einstein Fellowships are the same. Every agency and assignment and office on Capitol Hill, as you can imagine, is unique and very different. And so my experience involved working for about a year and a half, all told, on the Energy Literacy Initiative with the U.S. Department of Energy. I inherited that project from another Einstein Fellow, Matthew Inman, who did a massive amount of work before I got it. And you'll appreciate this, Gina, because he actually was wrapping up getting the last of the 13 federal agencies that put their seal on the framework to approve it when I kind of stepped in and started helping him out, and then took it over once he left and I started my second year. So you can imagine that's quite a feat.
Yes.
It is a, yes, it's a yes. twin to the climate literacy framework, which NOAA had really spearheaded. And so those two documents have really been, they've had really huge impacts on the next generation science standards and just directing lots of different initiatives associated with climate and energy education in the country.
So it's, and you brought it over the finish line because it's, you know, I have this expression that I use a lot, teamwork makes the dream work. And it's so real. Some of those expressions that kind of get thrown around and may sound a little bit pithy, they're not for me. And I wasn't using a lisp. It's P-I-T-H-Y, everybody. And, you know, I kind of want to explain a little bit. I bring these into my podcast because I like our guests to know the richness of the experience of getting to spend time with people like you and what you bring to the table, especially since these podcasts are focused on Tucson. So all of your enriching experiences, we got to benefit from that wonderful largesse on your part and for the experience, which leads me to the next one, which I never heard of this either, and I have a degree in education. You also served on the NEED, which is National Energy Education Development Project's Teacher Advisory Board, for over a decade, and that's a lot. So tell us about NEED and the role that they play in terms of support for teachers, and Lord knows they need it, don't they?
Yes. Teachers need tons of support and morale support as well right now, especially.
My involvement
with the NEED project started when I was teaching in Idaho as well. And I had become involved with Idaho National Lab and was helping them with physics teacher workshops that lasted a week and pulled physics teachers from around the country to come learn about nuclear physics. You might know that Idaho National Lab is the only national lab that's run by the Office of Nuclear Energy through the Department of Energy. And so we would bring teachers in for that. And then through connections with folks that I met through Idaho National Lab, I got connected with the NEED Project. And they really have the largest collection of free curriculum that is regularly updated, and they utilize this teacher advisory board that I still serve on to make sure that teachers from the grade levels that the curriculum is designed for are reviewing it and saying that it's developmentally appropriate and making sure that it's good, and then have experts look at it. So in terms of, if I could only send a teacher to one place to get really great resources related to energy education, it would be the NEED Project. That's how big they are, and that's how much work they do. And they've been at it for over three decades, so they've got a ton of experience.
So, you know, I want to press pause here, and I feel like I'm in a kind of a weird space so that everybody knows that. I mean, when am I not in a weird space? But this is being taped on a Friday afternoon. We just started, you know, hearing all about an incredible, frightful potential war. It's real already, but how big it will get, we can only hope and pray that it doesn't. But so I think I can tie it to how important these conversations are, because education is the key to world peace, if you ask me, educating mm-hmm. girls even better. Mm-hmm. And we need our teachers, and they're so undervalued. So it's all part, to me, of very, you know, kind of divinely inspired that this is the time, and your work is so inspirational. And I want to tell you, I'm involved in this project with, I would call him a friend, Seth Godin, who is a really world-renowned business blogger, international speaker. And I'm working with he and other people from around the world on something called the Climate Almanac, which I want you to know about. And it's what made me think of it is it's going to be free. And there's great minds from all over the world working on this. It's already a national bestseller. It's not even out yet, but that's what Seth Godin does, every book he ever wrote. And the operative word is free, because teachers yes. don't need to pay for anything else. They need access to good, high-quality, energy-related curriculum. So I hear you, your enthusiasm, well, and I understand it.
We truly are kindred spirits, because everything that we design is licensed Creative Commons share alike. We want teachers to have access to it, and we make sure that it's high quality. And on and on. So I am completely 100% in. And we are always asking folks, is it free and will it always be free? Because there's that nasty trick of like, hey, yeah, it's free now.
Six
and then
months
teachers,
free.
Yeah, teachers depend on it. And then they go, oh, now you have to pay for it. So right. I'm in. And that free, high quality curriculum is critically important.
And, you know, one of the highest compliments that I have gotten in this journey of almost 15 years is I know that there are teachers that use some of my podcasts and my blogs mm-hmm. as education for their kids. And they should,
sure.
because there's a lot of really good, high-quality, free information. And people have said, why don't you charge for your podcast and monetize it? And I'm like, why don't you start your own podcast and do that? Oh, I'm really being cheeky today. I better yeah. get my attitude
no,
under control. But I want it to be free so that people can
yeah.
learn. It's a social justice issue.
Yeah, I can offend some other people and just say, you know, teachers pay teachers, I think, is a horrible, nasty thing that's happened to education.
Oh, my God.
And my dream is to have... you know, teachers give teachers. I think there is a bit of a movement starting on this front, but the idea, and I'm not undervaluing teachers' intellectual property and the work that they do to educate our students, but the idea of selling work that we have done to other teachers and charging them for it, I think is just a disastrous idea. I can't even fathom it. And so we don't do that, and I don't like the trend.
We are kindred spirits, and we're announcing on air that someday we're going to sit around a bottle of Prosecco and solve the world's education problems.
Okay. Absolutely.
So let's talk about your baby, metaphorically.
Yes.
Of course. You created Stamazing.
Yeah.
The Stamazing Institute, which is actually funded in part by Tucson Electric Power. I don't know if totally funded, but they fund a lot of really good stuff. And I'm proud to have them as one of my partners on this journey. So what are you up to? Tell us everything you ever wanted us to know about the Stamazing Institute.
Yeah. So the Stamazing project is the bigger project that I have here at the Pima County School Superintendent's Office. And basically... you know, when I was ending my Einstein Fellowship and looking for something fun to do next, this office was hiring a STEM coordinator, and there was nothing. Nothing existed. And for some people, I think maybe that would be daunting and scary. For me, it was lovely because it was a blank canvas, and I got to come in and build something that I'm now incredibly proud of 8.5 years later. Our initial... professional development that we provided was a small institute. And then we, as you can imagine, you have to hustle. You have to get people to support the work that you're doing and build your reputation. And TEP was in from the beginning on a small scale and then has become our title sponsor. And they are the only sponsor of our Stamazing Institute, and they fund it really well. And my metric for success was always this: being able to give teachers at least $200 of equipment and supplies per teacher, because of an initiative that I helped start in Idaho with a lot of other people, the iSTEM Institutes there, every teacher gets at least $200 worth of stuff. Idaho Power, who I work with still through that institute, we give teachers $500 to $600 worth of stuff, but the minimum kit level was this $200. So in my mind, this institute was going to be successful when I finally found enough funding to get to that level. And I can still remember the exact moment that it happened, because Wendy Erica Worden and Jennifer Cox, now West.
Know them both well. I want to ring the bell, because they deserve it. They deserve to have a bell rung.
They played a nasty trick on me one day. So I had asked, I had requested from TEP $20,000 to support our institute that next summer, and submitted my proposal, and I had gotten to know them a little bit at this point, and they had already funded, you know, little workshops here and there, but definitely nothing on that level yet. And they called me up. They were on speakerphone. I was in my office, and they said, yeah, we're not going to be able to do that. We looked it over. You know, we're not going to be able to do that. And in my head,
so
I'm just like, it's racing. Like, what am I, you know, like, what am I going to do? What other funders could I get? I'm just trying to think of, like, how am I going to make this thing happen? And they said, yeah, we're going to give you $40,000 instead. And I was like, what?
What
did you just say? And of course, I mean, you know, it's rare for me to get super emotional, but that was amazing. I mean, that really and truly has set us on a path that really has had such a huge impact on teachers. And I have story after story after story that I can share with teachers, even really experienced teachers. I had lunch the other day with Nikki Talicki, a teacher from AmFi, who was saying, you know, even with her decades of experience in the classroom, like, this work that you do has really inspired me and changed, you know, my teaching and just motivated me to continue to do such a great job with students. Same thing with another transformational story, Sherry Dennis, a fourth grade teacher now retired, but she's our robot general now. And she's been just involved with all of this and got into worms and composting. And that led us to like worm worlds with second graders and virtual land and all kinds of cool stuff. And so again, it definitely is a group of people that have contributed to and benefited from this work. But the support from TEP really put us on the map in terms of being able to meet that goal of providing teachers really and truly with what they need to engage their students with everything we were showing them.
I love that you shared all that. Like, I love, love, love that you shared all that. And when I was preparing for the show, I started looking down and I see like this, I have this visual of a matrix, and here's you as the big green dot connector, as I call it, bringing a lot of these organizations that may or may not have worked together, but that you're bringing them into the epitome or the quintessence of the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. And I said, oh my gosh, yeah, she's working with the Community and School Gardens program. Mm-hmm. Oh, I love Biosphere too. Oh, now my friend Julie is at Mission Garden. Mm-hmm. I know about the Arizona Project WET, the Green STEM program with the Desert Museum. I'm going like, whoa. And then the only one that I never heard about, I mean, I've interviewed Tucson Cactus and Succulent Society, because I know the guy that's the president of it. He and his wife are really good friends of one of my best friends, so I love it when I get to talk to him. But I didn't know anything about the MIT Lego molecules. You have to tell me a little bit about that, because I'm like, okay, you stumped the host.
Well, and so here again is just this beautiful story of connection. And I love connecting people. I love connecting people even when I'm not involved with what happens at the end of it. I have maintained a massive national network, and that was part of the deal I made when I took this position, was that I would still be able to do work on contract at a national level, and any money that was paid for my services would come into our project so that I could build something. Because the county very graciously pays my salary, but they don't pay for any of the work that we do with teachers, like any of the workshops, which we never do a workshop where we don't give stuff to teachers.
Right, right.
And so it, again, has been a lot of work to get this reputation built up and then support over the years. And the MIT connection came from one of our teachers was doing a program, a summer program in Alaska, and she was staying in a tent out in the wilderness collecting some data somewhere with another teacher. And as teachers do, whenever you have more than one teacher around each other, there's professional development happening because they can't help but share, like, hey, have you seen this? Have you seen that?
It's in their blood, right?
It is. And so this other teacher shared with Sophia Anderson, who is actually right now serving as an Einstein Fellow in Washington, D.C., along with Mike Vargas, another awesome Arizona educator. So we have two Einstein Fellows right now. But she heard about this MIT Lego Molecules project, and I reached out, as I would, to the Edgerton Center at MIT and said, oh, what are these, and how much do the kits cost, and what's going on? And immediately got this email back, like, who are you and what are you doing? And long story short, it's turned into an amazing partnership, as you might guess. And one of the MIT Edgerton faculty members is Dr. Amanda Meir, and she grew up in Tucson and has family here. And so she actually came back and ran two amazing institute strands for us a couple of years ago, again funded by TEP, one on Lego molecules and one on another thing that we then learned about, these DNA RNA protein kits that they have that are models, that are functional models that teach the central dogma of biology in a way that's really amazing, and every teacher in Arizona that teaches that should have them, and we're working on that.
Are they literally Legos or not?
Oh, yeah. So the Lego molecules side of it, use Legos to model molecules, and then they have mats and wet labs and lessons that go along with these mats. And I've had 50,000 Legos on a table in this room that I'm in that we're sorting out into kits to give to teachers for the Institute a couple of years ago. And we'll likely be doing this one again this summer as well because it's so popular. And one of those modules is about understanding air and combustion, incomplete and complete combustion, and what is the chemistry behind those. And another one is called Understanding Oceans. And that one gets into ocean acidification and climate change and talks about all of those impacts. And Dr. Kathy Vandiver, who is at MIT and came up with the Lego molecule sets and also the DNA, RNA, protein sets, actually spoke at the Arizona Science Teachers Association Symposium last summer for us and ran through the Understanding Oceans mat and Legos, and our teachers that were at the symposium got those sets. And then we had a professor from U of A, Dr. Russell, then speak about oceans and understanding oceans, and she is a world-renowned scientist on ocean science. And so anyway, it's just lots of cool connections that then lead to really amazing opportunities for our teachers.
And, you know, I really don't say this on every show. I think we are second cousins twice removed. I'm serious, because the most wonderful, flattering thing that someone can say to me is, you're such a good and intentional connector. And what you said about not always to benefit you, because I like to think that that's how I show up in the world as well. It's for the greater good. And we will be going for cocktails. Sorry that we're talking about alcohol on this show about educating kids, but we will have designated drivers or be very, very, very careful. And, you know, the idea, so many things are coming up for me because of my background of having had almost 30 years plus working with at-risk children and families, and knowing things about developmental assets, knowing things about how kids learn, the learning modalities, and really seeing how all of these incorporate the way that kids learn, every way that kids learn, whether it's touch or hearing or sight or sound. It's such a win-win-win. I got really excited preparing for this, what is happening now, turning out to be a very fast-moving show. But the buck stops here, so we can make it as long as we want. Let's go a little bit. This might be sobering, but maybe you'll shock me, and I'll just be doing the happy dance in private. But can you chat for a minute with us about the state science standards in Arizona versus around the country? Mm-hmm. How do we measure up from your perspective? Because you would have one because you've been around the country in many different roles.
Well, we lived through the adoption of these science standards. And I say that because Diane Douglas was the state superintendent of instruction at the time, and she had no experience as an educator or even on a school board, as far as I know. And
that sounds about right.
She went into the draft of the standards and rewrote some of them with no science background. And as you can imagine, it was very specifically targeted at standards that had to do with climate change, Big Bang theory, evolution, and so on. But we are also fortunate in this state to have another real amazing science education champion in Sarah Torres. She is the executive director for the Arizona Science Teachers Association, and she's a watchdog for science education. She really was mobilizing people to provide comments and reviews, and lots of us went to the Arizona School Board meeting where they were debating the standards, and the Arizona Science Teachers Association very carefully drafted recommended edits to the standards. And all of those, I'm happy to say, were adopted and included. And so we have standards that are fine. But, you know, I can share with you, I wrote an op-ed on this in terms of it is still devastating, though, that we had an opportunity to adopt fully the next generation science standards, for which we were a lead state writing them, and they were not even considered because of the politics at the time. Ugh. Even though this would have made life much easier for teachers, even though fiscally this would have been much better for the state of Arizona because we can utilize resources that have been designed by many other places around the country that are utilizing next generation science standards. Instead, what we have is something that is next generation science standards like. It's ish, you know, but it's just ish enough that it's really frustrating because teachers now have to crosswalk our standards to NGSS when they're accessing collections of lessons that are linked to those, and we have to adjust which science and engineering practice is being utilized in the content because that has been switched sometimes. And so it's just frustrating because in a time when teachers need support and help and for life to be made a little bit easier, you know, the politics of our state chose to make it a little bit harder and needlessly, in my opinion.
Shocking. That's all I'm going to say. That's all I'm going to say. It's okay.
Shocking, but not surprising.
Shocking,
in this state,
but
sadly.
Not surprising. So shock me a little more. How do they or do they not incorporate, you know, sustainability to me is like a great word. Mm-hmm. And it really is. And I mean that. But the reality of climate change is, to me, sustainability is how are we going to survive what's happening with mm-hmm. the planet and the climate. It's going to be 89 next week in Tucson, Arizona, mm-hmm. and it's freaking March. So if you don't think that's a harbinger of the summer we're going to have, so how do they address sustainability or climate change, or is that like forbidden?
It is in there again, thankful that, you know, attributable to Sarah Torres and the work that she did. It's there. Is it there with the boldness that it should be? No. And then as with anything, standards are not curriculum, right?
Right.
So,
right.
You know, teachers still have an opportunity to think about how they're going to engage their students to meet those standards. And that is where organizations like ours and support from TEP can actually push teachers to have the resources and the background knowledge that they need to really boldly teach about these topics and do it in a way that's going to empower our students to be the problem solvers and critical thinkers that we desperately need.
And it's really to draw a parallel to my life when I'm looking at some of the I would call the stages or whatever in American history. And I lived through a very violent one when, you know, two Kennedys were shot, Martin Luther King was shot. I mean, it was a very challenging time at the age that I was and had great parents helping me handle it. But right now, these are tumultuous times. The weather is scaring kids. There's no question about it. I mean, Kelly has kids and her kids are very bright and they ask her about climate change all the time because mm-hmm. they are informed young people. So I guess my question to you is, I wrote on my Facebook page, I use that as a platform to get my feelings out sometimes, and I don't care who's reading it. It's like, I got to get this out. I got to get it out somewhere. Mm. And I said, this is a time where every consciously living human being, it's all hands on deck. And I don't care what political party you are. I know very, very caring, committed, what I would call old school Republicans who care about education and respect and on and on. It's time for all of us to find our voices because there's a lot up for grabs right now. There's a lot at stake. So what would you say for our listeners? And we've got a wonderful audience. What's the best thing or the one thing or several suggestions for how the average man or woman on the street can help support education, support your efforts? What can people do? What's the call to action?
Yeah, I mean, I think every little bit, every little bit helps and counts. And I think just seeking out ways to take action. And it can be, again, from the smallest action to larger actions where people are advocating for policies that are going to have some big impacts. But I guess for me, we just want people constantly seeking those solutions. And I think, you know, the Yale Climate Communication Project is one of my favorites
yes.
to follow and see what
yes, me too.
Work they're doing. I also, again, think again, the NEED project has some resources that are associated with that. And then there is also, and I don't know if you're involved with it, the Climate Literacy and Energy Awareness Network.
I am not.
And they are amazing. They have a call every week where they get together and talk about climate and energy education related issues. And people from all over the country are involved in it. But they also have really amazing speakers. And they had a young man on not too long ago. And I'm sorry that I can't remember his name. His first name is Ankur, I want to say. But he had a great YouTube video the other day that he posted that was literally this topic. It was like, what can you do? What are some actions to make it very clear to people? And so I would recommend people to really find folks that also care about these ideas and are putting it into concrete actions so that they can find out easy and then more challenging ways to make a difference.
You know, I don't know. I loved this whole thing. Like, I loved it. This is just what I needed on a Friday afternoon when I'm thinking about, am I going over to the dark side or not? And then someone shows.
I always kid around. Like, people keep telling me that I need to pick up the passion, and I'm working on it. I'm trying.
Yeah, I know.
It's hard for me, though.
Some of my friends say, oh, God, don't get her started. Don't ask her about climate change. Don't ask her. No, she's going to get you for using that straw. And I say, if I hear them, I say, yeah, the straw is the least of your problems. It's a gateway to consciousness, people. So all good things must end, but this is like the beginning, because I loved everything you shared. I appreciate you and your work. I appreciate TEP and the kinds of things that they are making happen. It's not like buying a statue. They're investing in children, which are the only future we have ever had. Children are our future. So to have that coupled with what you're doing, I need things to give me hope these days. Believe me, I really do. I just watched a series on PBS. This will just make your day, about the impacts of the thawing of the permafrost in the northern part of our planet and what that means. And talk about science and energy and weather and what's going on. So this is all hands on deck, people. And if you're listening to this, that means you're already engaged. So thank you for sharing all this great information. Please, please, you, Danelle, share this podcast clip with a lot of the people that you gave kudos to.
Yes.
Because hearing the praise for what you had to say about them makes me really happy. And we'll do some great show notes and links. I would like to have, if you don't mind, a link to the op-ed you wrote.
Sure.
Because we have a great social media platform, and it's that sharing that shows that we're caring. So thank you, and thanks to our amazing listeners, because without you, there would be no us. And thanks to my amazing team that helps all of the wheels on this bus go round and round, and sometimes that's not so easy. So thank you.